Chapter 1. Alex. The Cost of Money Saved. If freedom means anything, it is the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. George Orwell. About 90% of the juveniles in the juvenile justice system have come out of the child protection system. Over 90% of the adults in the criminal justice system come out of the juvenile justice system. Minnesota's Chief Justice Kathleen Blatz and others call it a prison feeder system. The United States is the only nation in the world to build prisons based on failed third-grade reading scores. Nationally, over 50% of incarcerated youth have diagnosable mental illness. Children's Defense Fund, 2001. These are mental conditions that cause behaviors that condemn children to poor and unhappy lives on the edges of society. Treated, these children can learn to cope and meld into society. Untreated mental illness is responsible for many of the problems being experienced within American schools, courts, and communities. Abused and neglected children and their mental health issues will continue to make headlines and terrorize our communities until we decide to solve the problem. A guardian ad litem is a court-appointed advocate for children in the child protection system. I have been a guardian for about 50 children over 8 years. These are my observations and stories about my guardian ad litem children and information that I believe is important for all Americans, but especially the children. My young friend Alex is a slight, sweet boy who has real gifts for music and dance. With no help or training, he placed second out of 1,100 children at his high school talent show with an amazing dance routine. Alex is smart, too. Had the state left Alex in the foster home where he was placed at birth, he could have led a normal suburban life with decent parents and loving siblings. His birth mom had lost 2 other children to child protection due to her cocaine addiction. Alex was born cocaine positive and came to live with a happy and caring family in a warm and inviting home. At 15, he should have been thinking about normal teen things, instead of living in his 27th foster care placement in 7 years. Instead, he lives with constant anxiety and fear from the 4 frightful years he was locked in a bedroom days at a time, starved, tied to a bed, sexually abused, and beaten by his demented father. Can you imagine a 4-year-old boy being tied to a bed and left alone without food for days at a time? When Dad came home, he beat and sexually molested his helpless son. Alex's mom had her parental rights terminated by the courts. Biological dad petitioned the Minnesota courts for his parental rights to his child. Alex's guardian state did not check with the Wisconsin courts. The Wisconsin court order that forbade the father to be around young boys because of his criminal sexual history with children was not discovered until after 4 years of violence and sex abuse had occurred. Both Alex's father and mother have spent most of their lives in the judicial system. Their parole officers explained to me how both parents had spent most of their adult lives in prison. Neither one of Alex's parents were capable of dealing with the outside world or their own asocial and criminal behaviors. Each of them came out of horrific, toxic homes themselves, passing problems from generation to generation. It is a common error or policy that state courts have not been motivated to cooperate with other state courts in these matters. The state may not have enough funding to handle its own state internal affairs, let alone worry about the problems another state may be having. In Alex's case, the state would have saved millions of dollars and many years of a child's suffering if it had just spent the dollars and investigated his biological father's criminal court records. Perhaps each state believes that it is serving its citizens and saving money by not sharing information. Whatever the rationale, the costs incurred by the state of Minnesota for a child like Alex are very high, and we are by no means done paying. Placements, courts, and therapy, not to mention the suffering of Alex and all the people he affects every day, will continue to cost the state until he has learned coping skills and sufficiently unlearned his early childhood lessons. Like so many abused and neglected state ward children, Alex did not receive the help he needs for his severe and chronic problems and he will spend many years suffering because of it. There is also a cost to the mayhem that damaged children cause the people they encounter. Neglected and abused children make up a great majority of the crime, drugs, and violence we see on TV and in our newspapers. We all know how valuable it is to simply feel safe and know that our own family members are not endangered. We know how terrible it is when that illusion is dashed and one of our own is robbed, murdered, or raped. Alex knows he's not normal. He would so like to be normal, but he doesn't know where to start. If he were normal, he wouldn't be ridiculed in school and among his peers, a failure in school, and neurotic and sometimes psychotic when dealing with authority figures who try to make him do things like conform or follow the rules. Some of us view the parents of neglected and abused children as irresponsible, violent, or addicted and find it possible to blame them and forget about it. This solves nothing. We will either understand and address the problem, or it will get worse. It's critical to realize parents with severe underlying psychiatric disorders and chronic and damaging drug and alcohol addictions create a home life that guarantees their children a terrifying childhood. This creates a child as dysfunctional as the parent, who will go on to create his or her own dysfunctional family. It's a cycle that rarely ends without intervention. When biological dad finally placed Alex in school at the age of 7, the first observant nurse saw the big bruises all over his body and did the right thing. Within a short time, Alex was placed in foster care and Child Protection was able to wrest custody from the father. Traumatic living conditions and physical assaults have had monstrous impact on Alex's development as a human being. His abuse was not singular or occasional, but repeated regularly over many years. Human behaviors change to meet the demands of the environment. In this developmental respect, all sentient beings are alike. Staying alive and avoiding pain becomes hardwired into mental circuitry. Nothing else matters. Abused children like Alex develop very differently from non-abused children. Coping behaviors learned by abused children are terribly counterproductive once the child is out of the abusive circumstances and trying to live a normal life. The behaviors developed for staying alive and avoiding pain dominate and thus can become significant detriments to getting along in society. As a matter of fact, for many troubled youth, their explosive responses and pain avoidance behaviors define them as social misfits and send them to prison. It is impossible to overstate Alex's level of anxiety. Concentration is not a skill owned by any of the abused and neglected children I have known. Hypervigilant to his surroundings, untrusting, always seeking, unable to breathe deeply and relax for even a minute, Alex is uncomfortable in almost all situations. His self-loathing is frightening and painful to witness. For the better part of 8 years, I have visited Alex in the many foster and group homes that he has lived in around the state. I have yet to visit a foster home or group home that has the training, amenities, services, or therapies needed to accomplish their complex and difficult tasks. It is my hope that one day my community will provide all group homes with decent furniture, a working piano, and enough trained staff to adequately deal with the exceedingly complicated lives of the children they work with. I do not wish to diminish the efforts of the committed and caring people who are trying desperately to help these children. My point is that all the facilities are overcrowded and understaffed. Many of the therapists and social workers are young and undertrained for their complex tasks, often in over their heads. Pay is poor and transfers are common. Neglected and abused children need long-term relationships with adults, any adults. By underappreciating this fact and underpaying and underrespecting the people who provide the lifeblood services to these children, our systems ensure that there will be no consistency or long-term relationships for children in our child protection systems. All abandoned children have an intensive need for human attachment and a very special need for a relationship with a trusted adult. Alex may never have had a nice day in his life. 8 years of life within our system of courts and treatments have cost Alex a normal life and our community $1 million or more dollars in services. In cases like this, with an adolescent boy or girl, our community has only begun to pay. It's not just the money that we should be concerned with. It's the destroyed lives, safe streets, and a reputation as a society that throws away children. Counties act as if the subsidized care of other people's children should be so undesirable and rotten with scarcity that it deters those people from behaving in such a way that puts their children in harm's way to be demolished by the system. It's all very cynical and counterproductive. The strong social desire to punish those people can only create more and greater pockets of indescribable suffering. Social policy seems to be the punishment will continue until the morale improves. Providers of services to children are moved around by policy, certain functions, certain people, and by the fact that providers also will move around to climb their own financial and employment ladder. This is the way the system works, and is no reflection on the workers. Because of these policies, I may be the only adult who has remained in Alex's life since he entered the child protection system. Social workers rotate out of his life every few years. Social workers rotate out of the lives of all state ward children who remain in the system. Abandonment issues and the constant turnover of the adult figures in his life have taught Alex not to get too close to people. He accepts this fluid change of authority figures as the way his world works. This kind of policy does not help abandoned children learn to build relationships or to understand love or trust. Instead, it ensures that relationships will be transitory and children's abandonment issues will be exacerbated. After many hours of watching and talking with Alex and other children like him, I repeatedly see how hard it is for them to learn how to love or trust another human being. No spouse, no best friend, and in general, no love for himself. Teaching invisible children how to love and respect themselves is a very difficult and important task. Love is a tough concept to relate in this context. It is the single biggest need in the life of an abandoned child. To not have love for oneself or others is only part of the problem. The other part is not to be able to have it. Abandoned children often have been so badly damaged that they refuse to allow another human being close to them ever again. Once that happens, love can never be a part of their life. By definition, you can't love someone you are not close to. Troubled children over the age of 12 are the least likely to be adopted, and sometimes don't have the luxury of contact with siblings or other family members. Many don't have any past to connect with, and no adult figures they can attach to. These become the impossible cases, where the child is moved from group home to foster home and back to a group home because of serious problematic behaviors. If we wonder why gangs provide such a magnetic attraction, this is it. Rules, respect, consistency, pride, it is all right here in the gang. Neglected and abused children are very needy. What happens when they don't have needs met is as serious as the initial abuse that brought them into the system. The results are terrible and long-lasting, often for life. To not address this simple basic need is an absolute failure of our system and an abdication of our responsibility as a community, as in, we the people who make the laws. Abandoned children need consistency in their lives once they have been removed from their homes. They need immediate and professional help to keep them from rebelling from a society they know hates them. This perception is their reality. The policies most states have for child wards do not provide consistency, high-quality staffing, or services that are needed to get the results these children must have to stay out of gangs and re-enter society. I have worked with individual neglected children who have had over 100 different adults in their lives over a 6-year period. Talk about feeling passed around and unwanted in a cold bureaucratic system. These kids are not stupid. In short order, a child accurately deduces what kind of relationship he has with the state. He knows it's an uncaring system. He knows the feeling of abandonment for a second, third, and fourth time. The kind of help these children need does not lend itself to crowded conditions with very disturbed children battling to get their fair share of a therapist's attention. Abandoned children need relationships that last, and people who understand and care about them, with the sincerity and training to make a difference. Mental health services are not a benevolence that society grants to a mentally ill or emotionally damaged child. From an economic perspective, it is far cheaper to help damaged children heal their wounds and become normal functioning adults than it is to let their mental problems fester until outrage and behavioral problems spill out into the community. They will all too soon become parents, with their own history of drugs, crime, violence, and their very own continued family cycle of child abuse. If there were a point to reinforce with invisible children, it would be provide them with adequate mental health services and a home and school life that they require. Most often, we wait until the child has done something terrible to warrant mental health services, and too many children have become unadoptable in our system. The combination of removal from the only home that they have ever known and the traumas suffered from abuse and neglect demands rigorous and extended mental health therapy. Without swift and sufficient mental health services, these children continue to develop poorly without healing, without direction or understanding. Taking children out of toxic environments is not enough to save them. They need professional guidance. The post-traumatic stress syndrome suffered by soldiers and victims of horrible crimes is in some ways similar to the mental health trauma suffered by abused children. The difference between soldiers and children is that children had no before to relate to. Like a person who has lost her sight after years of seeing, a one-sighted person can remember the concept of seeing, or the soldier can remember the normal life led before the terrifying events that caused their trauma. Abused children suffered trauma day after day, year in and year out. They do not have a concept of what before was like. They cannot know what normal should be. Normal is abuse. Normal is torture. Normal is sex, drugs, and pain for five-year-olds. Long-term therapy is a must for children who have undergone the trauma of abuse and abandonment. To not have adequate services for abandoned children guarantees that their learned responses to torture, fear, loss, and grief will supersede behaviors that could facilitate a functional transition into adulthood. In times of budget shortages, states cut their budgets for human services, crippling each agency's ability to oversee child protection services, nursing homes, mental health, and chemical dependency programs. As this book will argue, states save money by providing sufficient and appropriate services to the people who work and live with invisible children. It is my observation that not providing services while the chance of rehabilitation exists is far more costly in tax dollars than doing what is right and necessary could ever be. Foster and adoptive parents are special people and deserve more help than they are getting. They need better training to understand and manage the behaviors of the troubled children they work with. They are often not told of the serious problems their children suffer from, or, if they are told, the issues are minimized. As we better understand the issues affecting abused and neglected children, positive change will occur. Educate the social workers, the foster parents, and the adoptive parents. Foster and adoptive parents need to know and understand the issues they are dealing with. I have witnessed a county placing an autistic child with an unsuspecting family. I have witnessed a county planting a psychotic 14-year-old boy into a family of young children without warning the parents. Some counties are making great strides in making available information and educating workers, parents, and service providers. Other counties and government agencies hide information about their state ward children and behave less than honestly towards foster and adoptive parents. What are these well-meaning families to do when they discover the children they adopted have serious mental health problems they can't begin to understand or deal with? Counties owe state ward children and the families who adopt them the information that will help them deal with the circumstances they are bringing into their homes. Many of the families who tried to help Alex made extraordinary efforts to give him love and make him one of their own. But in the end, no one was allowed close enough to hurt him again. He caused his own pain. Alex was forced out of his first long-term placement home because he took a knife to his siblings' toys and frightened his adoptive parents. He was 9. Alex's second adoption attempt failed because he threatened to kill the family's dog. With each new home disruption, Alex further cements his abnormal definition of self. He knows he's not like you or me. The self-disappointment for one more personal failure is nailed into his being. Alex's destruction of his relationship with his first and most loving foster home were complete. A combination of psychological problems compounded by sexual identity issues made his behaviors unbearable. With early and adequate therapy, he could have managed his mental health issues and remained with his first family placement. The family loved Alex and wanted him to stay with them. They tried to live with his extreme and escalating behavior problems. In the end, he became a danger to himself and the family. He was made to leave. The fear and terror a small child like Alex lives with is exemplified by recalling the fear he put into 3 different foster fathers over a 3-year period. Alex weighed no more than 75 pounds, and the smallest of these fathers was well over twice his size and weight. They never won against a whirling dervish with no fear or love for himself and no control of or awareness of his insane mode. At 12, he kicked a public school teacher so hard that the teacher was severely injured. Alex has tried to kill himself on several occasions. He has assaulted teachers, stabbed other children with pens and pencils, cut open furniture and mattresses to hide food, and been a frightened, anxiety-ridden child who behaves poorly most of the time, trusts no one, and hates himself and all forms of authority. To hear a young child speak about self-hatred, feeling abnormal, and unloved has been one of the hardest parts of my being a guardian ad litem. It is wrong to blame him for his asocial behavior. It accomplishes nothing to blame any of these children for who they have become. I would do these things too if I'd been assaulted as he was, and so would you. Outrageous behaviors can be seamless to children with mental health problems. They are not even aware of their actions. Many abused children engage in compulsive behaviors that create serious barriers to being normal. These behaviors control and define abused and neglected children. Normal is something that Alex speaks of and dreams about. On a busy weekend for suicides, when all juvenile psychiatric hospital beds were filled, Alex was sent out of town for his own safety. The only juvenile psychiatric beds available were at a Christian group home 4 hours out of the metro area. The state flew me up with him as his guardian ad litem. I could ask questions, but I had no authority to change anything. The PhD therapist promised me that Alex's sexuality issues would not be a problem. Funding had recently been cut to this organization, and large staff cuts had destroyed morale. Alex gave me permission to speak to the psychologist about his sexuality issues. So I did. She guaranteed me the boy was in good hands with progressive, positive people. I learned later that this already fragile, suicidal, unhappy boy was scorned, harassed, and ridiculed by the other troubled children for the entire 4 weeks of his protective stay. At the same time, religious staff members tried to convince Alex that Christian doctrine could fix his sexual identity issues. This treatment was wrong for Alex in so many ways. It exemplifies how our social institutions are exacerbating and not solving the problems of neglected and abused children. I did not see the bills, but this was expensive therapy that resulted in regression to more self-hate, more fear, and more anxiety. Other than keeping Alex from killing himself during his treatment, nothing positive came of his stay. This was not a good use of taxpayer money. At the same time, there have been many wonderful people who have lived and worked with this boy for his 8 years in child protection. Alex has had 14 caseworkers, multiple therapists, and a series of miscellaneous county and state workers. He's had perhaps 100 adults who have worked on his case. No one stays in his life, and no one has been able to undo the damage that was done to him. It would be much more meaningful to Alex, and others like him, if there were some consistency to the adult figures in his life. If Alex had received adequate psychological counseling after he was removed from his abusive parental home, his behaviors could have been modified to allow him a more normal life. I also believe assigning caseworkers for long-term care of state wards, like Alex, would have been helpful for him to learn how to trust adults in his life. Instead, he learned that caseworkers were busy people who would probably be moved from his case and replaced with a new person before too long. Unwilling or unable to anticipate the initial importance of a basic investigation of the father before granting him custody of Alex, the county and state are spending millions of dollars making this unhappy child into a desperately needy and unhappy juvenile, who likely will become a violent and unhappy adult. I know him as a beautiful and gifted child who deserves better. Did the state think it unproductive to take the time or the expense to review the father? Any minor review would have shown a very long criminal file, a judge's order to stay away from young boys, and Alex's dad was in prison when he made the request. Some observers might claim that the state had the obligation to look out for the better interests of this child and really failed in this instance. In our participatory democracy, are not all of us as citizens complicit in Alex's destruction? America is one of the wealthiest and best-educated nations on Earth. We have chosen not to see the tens of thousands of invisible children living in the same tortured circumstances, in the same hopeless cycle of poverty, violence, and incarceration as Alex. American citizens have chosen the policies that lead to children we don't see, not receiving the services they badly need. These children will almost certainly become the next generation of ex-convicts and young mothers having their own families of invisible children. Alex is much more likely to enter the juvenile justice system than your child. For years, he has taken psychotropic medications to treat his various mental illnesses. Often, he chooses not to take his medications. Alex has become familiar to police and juvenile justice, and I would argue that he is on the verge of discovering the criminal justice system. The price Alex has paid and has yet to pay for being born into the wrong family is a great price indeed. Alex may or may not become part of the American prison feeder system and one of the 600,000 felons released each year. He may become one of the 66% of ex-felons who then reoffend and return to prison each year because they do not have the skills to function in our society. The good news for Alex is that people are trying to help him with his many problems. The bad news is society and the institutions that serve him quickly abandon young men, especially young men of color. Not doing well in school and being well known to police at a young age is not a formula for staying out of jail. Lois, Alex's longtime court-appointed lawyer, and I were talking recently about a system so dysfunctional that she is not contacted when he gets into trouble. Lois, like many other court-appointed child court attorneys, are volunteers who want to make a difference in the lives of the abused children who become their clients. Instead, our institutions of police, courts, and sometimes schools do not share information or coordinate in the best interest of the child. Instead, a new attorney is brought in who knows nothing of Alex's past. The court holds that Lois is only his child protection lawyer. She knows Alex and could speak meaningfully to the authorities about him in troublesome instances. Instead, the court appoints some other never-seen-him-before attorney to defend him. That's how juveniles end up in prison. Our communities are overdue for a big discussion around how to deal with troubled youth who are wards of the state. A failure at this stage is too often permanent for the child. American juvenile crime statistics are the highest in the industrialized world. Many American juveniles are tried in adult courts. Once a juvenile enters the adult criminal justice system, the data is compellingly negative. Criminal justice seeks to punish, not rehabilitate. Juveniles in criminal justice remain in the system for many years. It would be simple enough to ensure that a single lawyer who knew and could speak to the court about the child, could address the court in his behalf. There are many proven programs to help juveniles stay out of prison. The Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report from June 25, 2004, has a new study that shows a terrific success rate for juvenile boys just like Alex. Therapeutic foster care resulting in 73.5% fewer felony assaults and 37% reduction in crime after intervention than those placed in other kinds of group care. It's the best results I've seen in my years of research. The study found that for every dollar spent in justice system costs, that same dollar spent on therapeutic foster care saved $14.07. At the rate we are now moving to implement new and better programs, I would estimate 10 to 20 years will pass before this one gets the attention it needs to launch nationally, without your involvement. Alex's sexuality issues are uncomfortable to social workers, and there are few policies that help direct workers who must work with children's sexuality issues. Because of this, my friend Alex has not received timely, effective care for what has tortured him most. It is not that the care Alex has received has been cheap or that the child care workers are at fault. The care Alex has received to this point has been very expensive. In his seventh year as a state ward, Alex finally met a counselor who could talk to him about his sexuality issues. The care Alex needed came too little and too late. He has already fallen into experimenting with prostituting himself. I estimate that Alex has cost the community $30,000 to $50,000 a year for the last 8 years, with the very real potential of spending another 30 or 40 years in institutions. There are thousands of boys just like him in our communities. As a middle-class kid who has had only a few bad days that I didn't bring on myself, it is a cosmic incongruity that I should know so many charming children who lead these desperately unhappy lives. This is not only painful for any caring person to observe, it is also expensive and unproductive for the community to maintain, and it makes for a much more dangerous society as well. We have a system in which almost all of the children in juvenile justice have come out of the child protection system, and over half of the children in juvenile justice have diagnosable mental illness. Children's Defense Fund, 2001. These truths should drive our institutional policies, yet they are not even known to the average politician or educational administrator. The juvenile justice system has become the dumping ground for abused children with mental health problems. Our state and federal policies are setting these children up for a life of failure and incarceration and causing us to live in fear of our own safety. We, as citizens, are all accomplices in this abomination. We can do better. Call to action. It doesn't take much to discover a story like Alex's. You might read about children like him. You might hear about children like him. You might experience children like him. Make it your business to find out how your community handles very troubled children. Learn about your county's child protection system and do some small things to make a difference in a troubled child's life. Investigate mentoring programs in your community. Investigate your county's child protection system. Investigate mental health resources for children in your community.